What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Plant the Spear Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse, and welcome to the show. On today's episode, we're just going to do a quick rewind of the Duquesne game. I had a chance to go back and watch the film. And then, obviously, we'll get into the big one this week against LSU, something we're all excited about. This one's been circled on the calendar for quite some time. Obviously, it's on the national stage on Sunday night, so you kind of got the whole TV screen to yourself. And I know I'm just excited about it. I know you guys are excited about it, too. We've been waiting on this one, and it's here. It's time. So we're going to throw down in the Superdome, and hopefully Florida State comes out on top. Just trying to get everything out for you guys a little early this week. I am traveling to New Orleans for the game, so I'm super excited about that. So this will give you guys some more time to consume this content, and as well as let me go ahead and get it out because I'll be on the road. And let's get into Duquesne real quick. I had a chance to go back and watch the film, and I'll just try and sum it up real quick. I do watch film at about three-quarter speed. I do like to rewind about 3 to 5 times a play just so I can watch each segment or each position group and how they perform. And overall, my thoughts when I watched it, you have to keep in mind a couple of things first. They did have some pieces out, which I feel like were crucial pieces. They also ran a very vanilla game plan because they did not want to show LSU much. And they were still able to come out and dominate 47-7, 638 yards of offense to 164. That's a dominating win. When I went back and watched the film, I actually feel better about the game in all areas except for one. And that makes me feel positive going into LSU. So real quick, passing, of course, Jordan was efficient, didn't throw for 300-400 yards against FCS, but he never really does. That's not Jordan's game. He was very efficient with the ball. He had an adjusted completion percentage of 80%, which is nice to see. He had a very impressive 12.5% big-time throw rate and a 0% turnover-worthy play rate. That's Jordan's game. Is he's efficient with the ball, he protects the ball, and we didn't even really see him use his legs, which is something I'm sure you'll see a little bit of in LSU. We won't really worry about covering the backup quarterback situation too much. You guys saw that. It's a wreck, and I'd rather see A.J. Duffy take the snaps and deal with his growing pains. If it's a situation where Jordan's out, guys, I'm worried. I don't think this offense is – they're either going to be so one-dimensional or just they're in trouble because he just is not getting it. And we'll just leave it at that. Hopefully he can improve, or maybe they can roll with Duffy. Wide receivers, my thoughts after rewatch, this group has such – a higher ceiling than that of the receivers in the past. They have incredible size, especially when you look at Portier emerging too. If he can put together performances like that, he had 84 yards, led the team in receiving, and if he can consistently put together games like that, you have another big body receiver. That's not something they had before. I mean, when you got Johnny Wilson, Malik McLean, Portier, Deuce Spann, you got some size and some athletes here that they just really haven't had before. At least not in a while, not in the last few years. And they didn't even have Ontario Wilson, who I do like as a receiver. They also lost Johnny Wilson early. Looks like he's going to be back for LSU, which is good. And, I mean, these guys could be a problem. Once they open up the playbook, once they all get on the same page and get in sync with Jordan, I'm really excited about what this group can be. Of course, it was against Duquesne, so we'll have to see it against a better secondary. But the potential is there. So next up, I'll talk about the backs. There's really not much to say, guys. You saw it. I mean, these guys are absolute. It's a three-headed monster in the backfield. They had 34 missed tackles total on 51 carries. Half of their yards were yards after contact. And, I mean, they just ran wild. Three backs over 100 yards. I don't care the opponent you're playing. Rushing for 400 yards, three different guys putting up 100 yards, that's no easy feat. And so kudos to them. I am the least worried about this running game going forward. Of course, we'll see if they can reproduce it against a defense like LSU. But, you feel really good about the direction they're headed. They all just, I mean, it was insane to watch. It was fun to watch these guys work. And I'm super impressed. Hopefully they can repeat it again this week. But I think this is going to be your strongest segment on the team. Moving up front to the offensive line, this was the only area on rewatch that concerned me more now than when I watched the game before or before the season. Obviously, it was still game one. They used a lot of bodies to try and, get a lot of experience and see how different guys performed in different lineups, which is something you have to figure out with your offensive line. I think that was one of the objectives of this game. you obviously had Maurice Smith out. Darius Washington left a little early with injury. But as a whole, I just really wasn't impressed with their play. It wasn't bad. I mean, anytime you have 400 yards rushing, the guys were doing some work, but they got a lot of help from the backs and the receivers. And, of course, you would think, duh, the backs helped run. But what I mean by that is there was a lot of instances where these guys were getting hit behind the line of scrimmage, and just their natural ability, they were able to break some tackles and get out and make a play out of it. And when you look at 34 missed tackles on 51 carries and half their yards came after contact, that shows you they were getting hit. It was not like there was some giant gaping hole that they were just running through. And that was a concern. On multiple occasions, I saw them just absolutely whiff on blocks, guys standing around looking for someone to block. They had a decent push, but the whiffs were concerning, especially on some blitzers. They missed a lot of linebackers coming through just completely almost untouched. And that's something that's going to have to get cleaned up. A few times the tackles were like they were on turnstiles, and they probably got away with, you know, no exaggeration, 20 to 30 holding calls. There was so many times where I'm like, well, he just got turned around and he tackled him. And they got away with it. So it's something that's going to have to get cleaned up. But again, like I said, when you look at, they have another week now. They got some film to watch. They can clean some things up. I think the unit will be okay getting Darius and Maurice back, who both look to be back for LSU. And so I'm not overly concerned about it, but LSU is an entirely different animal. And I am worried about whether they can block this front or not. And Florida State's probably going to have to game plan around that. So it's something to watch going forward. I don't think they had a bad night, but it was just when you watch it slowed down and replay, it wasn't the most impressive performance. They were able to get some push, which is good, but you would expect that against a team like Duquesne. Even though most of their best players were on the defensive line, I mean, that's to be expected. Because, to be honest, none of those guys would crack the two deep at LSU. So it's going to be a lot bigger challenge this week, and I hope they're ready for it. I hope they get some improvement. You know, they got some guys I like. It didn't look as good on film as I had originally thought. So that's my main concern in the LSU game. On defense, I'm not as concerned about the defensive line as people thought, or some people were. They didn't think there was enough pressure created, but if you look at what Duquesne ran, it was a lot of quick game. They wanted to get the ball out very fast because they knew they couldn't block FSU. And anytime they ran something that was long developing, dropbacks, rollouts, stuff like that, Florida State was in the backfield almost immediately. Their offensive line was on roller skates, and I mean, they were 5, 6, 7 yards deep, quick. So I'm not overly worried about that a whole lot. Like I said, they Duquesne gets credit for kind of an, it didn't work, but they had an intelligent game plan to try and mitigate that defensive line. The twos didn't create as much pressure as I would like to have seen against an FCS team, but we already knew there was a drop-off there, so just something to watch going forward. But I'm not really worried about this defensive line. I think they'll have a improved game this week and against an offensive line that has some questions of its own. Linebackers I'm really impressed by. I'm really high on this group, namely Tatum Bethune. I think he is as advertised. You can see that he was a 100-plus tackler at UCF. He's all over the field. He had a pass breakup or two. And, I mean, he's just instinctual. He's got that linebacker instinct that we haven't seen for a while around here. And DJ Lundy looked good. He was kind of all over the field. He looks very athletic. So I was impressed by his play. And Kalen DeLoach, too. He looks like he's ready to have a big year. I'm really excited about those three. Brendan Gann even got in there some. Amari Gaynor, he was in a boot. It looks like he's back on the depth chart for LSU that Florida State put out today, so I'm glad to see that. Hopefully that at least provides him some depth because his performance was a little concerning. He was the fourth lowest graded linebacker, really defensive player on the entire team. He bit on so many play fakes that it was a liability almost, and they were able to get some gains out of that. And a team like LSU will expose you if you do that. There was so many times where he bit on a play fake and they got the edge and it was too late. They were gone. Obviously, they didn't do much, but you're talking about Duquesne turning that into 6-8 yards. LSU might turn that into 60-80 yards. So that was a liability. But once you get your starters in there, I'm not overly worried about the linebackers. I'm actually really high on this group. Secondary looked good. They obviously needed Duke Cooper back in a bad way. His replacements were kind of the ones that had the most mistakes. I just don't see it from seven quite yet. And the good thing is he is listed on the depth chart, Duke Cooper, that is, as the starter this week. So that should give them a boost. Of course, Jamie Robinson did Jamie Robinson things and looked good. So not really concerned about the secondary. I feel pretty good about this group. And it's good because they're going to get tested this week. They definitely, like I said, they'll benefit from Cooper being back. Renardo Green looked good on film to me too. So it's something to watch, but I'm not worried about the secondary. Special teams, I think the return game was left a little bit to be desired. It's not like Duquesne was booming kicks, so they didn't have a ton of time to set up returns. Kick coverage looked great. I'm really excited about that. Hopefully that can help out with field position some, but they're going to have to prove it against better athletes this week as well. So that kind of wraps up the Duquesne. Again, I'd say overall, I feel more positive with also the looming fact of being worried about them being able to block LSU. If they can find a way to either scheme around that or they just make a good improvement and are able to block these guys, I feel good about Florida State. I really do. And we'll get into that with this LSU preview. So we'll go ahead and get into that now, and I'll kind of lay out some of the reasons why I think this is a winnable game for Florida State and what I see out of LSU. So we'll start. Obviously, you guys know, it's no secret, they got Brian Kelly, first-year head coach. The Tigers have been 11-12 since their national championship, so obviously not that great. And Kelly's been a good coach in year one. He normally adds about 1 to 2 wins to the previous record of the school that he's coming to. So it's not that he's a bad coach in first year. I just think you're getting this team so early on with so many new pieces that it does provide an advantage. And at the end of last year for LSU's bowl game, they only had 39 players active. So Kelly really did inherit a depleted roster. And now they took, I believe it was the most snaps or the most players through the portal in college football. They had 13 players that they took. And so, I mean, he has been able to rebuild the roster and he has had got some good pieces. But guys, they got questions all over the field. And so I know a lot of people like to not many people think Florida State is going to go in there and beat LSU outside of the FSU circles. LSU fans are already feeling pretty confident about this. And to be fair, you do have to go play them in the Superdome, which is essentially a de facto home game for them. But away from Tiger Stadium, they were 1-5 last year. So I don't know if that'll play into it or not, but hey, it is something to keep your eye on. ESPN has this game going 71% to LSU currently. So let's get into the 2021 LSU Tigers and how that transitions into 2022. Obviously, they went 6-7 last year. They're on a two-game losing streak. Like I said, they had a 1-5 record away from home. And let's go into their offense. So last year, their offense was pretty bad. They were 80th in scoring offense, 102nd in efficiency, 96th in explosive play rate, and only had a success rate of 40.7%. They only returned 56.4% of their production, and they have to replace, obviously, their leading passer, Max Johnson, who left for A&M. We presume it's going to be Jaden Daniels. That's kind of where all signs point. However, in the last practice notes that I read from another LSU writer, they said that Garrett Nussmeier had ran the ones a few times, but I still think it's going to be Jaden Daniels, mostly because he can help with the deficiencies they have up front, which is where I want to start. So they only return really only a couple guys that have any experience to build around. They did grab a couple of transfers, mostly from one was Group of Five, and I think one was FCS. So, I mean, it was, you know, take that for what it's worth. And the group was last year 54th in pressure rate allowed, 111th in sacks, which, again, isn't good. When I read that practice article that I was talking about, or the practice report I was talking about a second ago, they had a kind of a projected starting five. They said this group had been working together for about the last week, so it was who they felt was going to be the starters, being that we're this close to game week. I believe LSU should be releasing their depth chart today, Monday, August 29th, so we'll see how this shakes out. If so, We'll just go through it real quick from what I have. At left tackle is Will Campbell. And one thing before we talk about a lot of these guys, one thing you will notice is they have some size. These guys are big, and they're going to be a load to push around. So hopefully these guys drank an extra protein shake this week. But for what they have in size, they lack in experience. So starting with left tackle, Will Campbell. He's 6'6", 325, former four-star, true freshman, early enrollee, looks to be the starter. Obviously, true freshman means he does not have a single snap at the college level. How will that translate? It remains to be seen, but I have a feeling that these defensive ends are going to try and take advantage of that. I mean, you can be a great prospect, and that's perfectly fine, but there's a big difference between high school and college, and until you've strapped it up in a college game, that game moves a lot faster, and the competition level is a lot higher, so this may be something that Florida State can take advantage of. Next to him, you have Miles Frazier, who is 6'6", 325, transfer from Florida International. He was a freshman All-American. He has a lot of experience. However, it's all at the Group of Five level. And so how will that translate? Now, of course, we saw Florida State land a transfer offensive lineman of their own from Florida International, who was one of the better offensive linemen, offensive lineman on the team. But again, consider the group as a whole. So I'm not going to knock him there. But again, you have a guy who's really never played. When I looked at his game logs, he's played one Power 5 opponent, and that was Texas Tech, who really isn't known for their defense. Moving to center, you have Garrett Dellinger, 6'5", 320 pounds. He does have over 350 snaps of experience, but not a single one at center. So I don't know how, you know, could you have some snapping issues? The center is kind of like the quarterback of the offensive line. How well does he know the position and the calls? That could be something to watch. And when you look at his PFF grades, and guys, I understand PFF is not the gospel, but you can generally tell if a grade is good, it's for a better player. If the grade is bad, they probably didn't have a good performance. So it's not the gospel, but it's pretty close to give you an idea of how a player is. Most of his grades came out just above average, and 60 being average is usually step on the field. That's an average, kind of a depth player type deal. 70 is usually a quality starter, and most of his were just above 60. So again, you have a guy with some experience. He's a big body, but he's never played the position, and his grades have been pretty inconsistent when you break it down to the individual grades. Some were really good, some were pretty bad. At right guard, you have Anthony Bradford. He is a returner from last year's squad. He is 6'5", 345 pounds. Little over 250 snaps of experience, but I mean, I'm going to call it like it is, guys. He was poorly graded in every game except two, and he only has 45 snaps at the right guard position. So, of course, he can improve. It's not against the law, but when you look at his grades, they were pretty bad. Right tackle, Cameron Wire. This is going to be your most experienced returning player, kind of the guy that they're building this offensive line around. 6'6", 295 pounds, so he is a little on the lighter side. He is the most experienced player and the most experienced tackle with over 800 career snaps. However, again, his season grade for over 750 of those snaps were barely above average, and all of his snaps last season were at left tackle. I'm not sure why they didn't want him at left tackle this year, but you know, you have a guy now who's playing at a new position, which it's still a tackle position, but it is different when you play on the other side of the line and didn't grade out. So you look at their offensive line. They have a lot of size, but they don't have a lot of experience together. And then cohesiveness as a unit is huge in the offensive line, and they don't have a lot of well-graded games. So it kind of gives you an opportunity for Florida State to find an advantage here. Also, without going name by name, I saw who they projected to be the second team offensive line, and it looks pretty bad. I don't know what other way to say it. It looks pretty bad. So I'll just cover those real quick. They don't have a whole lot of experience, and when you look at the backups, one player is a redshirt freshman with zero snaps of experience. Three players have a combined 300 snaps, and they are all graded out poorly, and their pass blocking was especially bad. The last player in the group is an experienced transfer, but he comes from East Tennessee State. So how is he going to translate to the Power 5 level coming from FCS? So if they have to get into their depth chart, they're not in good shape. So I really think that this is going to be an advantage FSU that they can really exploit and take advantage of. So I don't know. You know, these guys might be okay. Who knows? But this is the biggest question mark on their team and is going to limit a lot of things. Next, we'll just touch on the running back situation real quick. You obviously had John Emery Jr., who was, from what I read, was the projected starter. Some people said he wasn't, but I think from what I read, he was the projected starter. Former five-star, senior running back, big dude, but he got suspended for two games. And so now you have Noah Cain in there, who is a transfer from Penn State, and while he's a bigger back, and he also, you know, he has some ability, he saw some limited action at Penn State. He only had 132 snaps last year, and on 106 attempts, he went for 350 yards and four touchdowns. That only comes out to 3.3 yards per carry. He also only had three runs of 10-plus yards and six missed tackles forced on the season. And again, I know it's against Duquesne, but Trey Benson had 16 missed tackles forced on 11 carries. So take that, you know, for what you will. And that's going to be their predominant workhorse because they don't really have a whole lot of experienced guys behind them. Their rush offense last year was already 104th. And 84th in EPA per run. So it wasn't like it blew you away there either. And so when you look behind him, you also have their backups who don't have a lot of production either. You have Armani Goodwin, who had 65 yards and on 16 carries for 4.1 yards a carry. Josh Williams, who had 107 yards on 23 carries at 4.7 yards per carry. So losing Emory Jr. was, I mean, that was a big hit for this run game. So, again, give me advantage FSU. I think they have better backs and potentially also a better offensive line. And so that's something that you can watch too, is or at least watch for FSU to be able to take advantage of. They're kind of thin. They don't have a lot of experience. And neither one of these, or at least Noah Cain anyway, has never played a snap in the LSU offense. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But I definitely would say advantage FSU on running backs too. At wide receiver, you obviously know they have Kayshon Boutte, who is already being talked about as one of the top receivers in the country, and I think he will be a problem to guard. He'll probably break one on FSU if they don't maybe double cover him or something like that. But you also have to remember a couple of things. He is coming off a season-ending ankle injury in 2021. They have said that he is up to 100% and participating, but they had to bring him on a little slow. So, you know, could that develop? Slow his development? I really don't know. He has a catch rate of 74%, a drop rate of 7.5%. Contested catch rate is only 37.5%, and 5 of 16 career games with 100-plus receiving yards. So, I mean, again, I'm not saying he's not a dominant player, but the stats don't really just kind of stand out. You know, they don't scream someone you can't guard. But I'm sure he'll get his. We'll see. He was on pace to be over 1,000-yard receiver last year in a not so great offense. So I'll just leave him at that. It's going to be a load to cover, and Florida State will have to kind of single him out as the one real big threat on this offense. Their second leading receiver was just a young guy, Jack Beck. I believe he was a freshman last year. He's another one that you're going to want to watch. He has been limited at times in camp with shin splints. He just returned to the starting rotation. So could that be something you might see show up in a game? Like if he gets shin splints, could that be something where maybe he just didn't get a lot of time with this new offense? So again, you know, there's these little tiny things that add up over time in a game like this where you have two close teams. It's the little things sometimes, guys. And also, we'll go ahead and move on to the quarterback. If they have a talented wide receiver group, a lot of that still depends on who's throwing them the ball. And we assume Jaden Daniels is probably going to be their starter, unless it's Nussmeier. But assuming that it is Jaden Daniels, he's obviously the most experienced. He has over 700 career passing attempts. And when they lost Miles Brennan, I mean, that was a big hit to their depth chart. Obviously, they didn't feel that he was going to be good enough to be the starter, and he walked away from football because of it. So maybe he wasn't the guy, but now you're down to really two quarterbacks with any kind of experience. So, of course, I think Nussmeier is probably a better backup than what we got, but if either team has to lean on the backup, it could probably not go so well. Jaden Daniels, he's a dual threat quarterback. He rushed for 844 yards at Arizona State last season. He could help hide some of the deficiency on that offensive line. So Florida State's going to have to try and contain him, which I think the speed and athleticism of the linebackers now being much improved over what we've seen in the past should help keep him in the pocket and should kind of force him to beat you with his arm. Because as a passer in 2021, he was really not all that impressive. He had 10 touchdowns and 10 interceptions. He only threw for 200 yards or more in 5 of 13 games. His last game with 300-plus yards passing was in 2019. So he's not the kind of guy to wow you with his arm. I mean, to be honest, he's comparable to Jordan in a way. I just think he doesn't quite have the accuracy that Jordan has, and he's not quite as efficient. But he is a good runner, so they're going to have to look out for that. And in fairness, in 2019, he had a pretty good season. He threw for over 2,000 yards, I believe it was, had a really good completion percentage. But last year was not great, and I don't know whether that's attributed to Arizona State and the pieces around him or what. But even with a better receiving core at LSU, you also have to understand he's not playing in Pac-12 anymore. Those defenses in the Pac-12 are nothing compared to what he's going to play now. So just kind of keep that in mind. How good can he be against SEC defenses and even Florida State's defense for that matter? So, of course, you know they played 2019 in the Sun Bowl. That was a different defense, different coordinators, different staff, all that stuff. But even then, he only went 12 of 28 for 195 yards, no touchdowns, and no interceptions, and only ran for 36 yards. So it's not like he lit you up last time he saw you. And that defense was not good. That was not a good defense. So like I said, I just wonder if he is going to be able to take full advantage of those receivers. And in the preseason article I did kind of a passer preview. So I'll go ahead and just kind of read some of those off. He is 6'3", 185 pounds. So he's not a real big guy. He has 3 seasons of experience. 1,855 snaps. He did lead the Pac-12 in completion percentage last year, but like I said, only 5 of 13 games with 200-plus passing yards. And when you think of the offensive line issues as well as the run game questions, I mean, they are probably going to have to beat you through the air, Florida State anyway, because that's where Florida State's strength is stopping the run with that defensive line. So last year at Arizona State, he did go 197 of 303 for 2,375 yards. Like I said, 10 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. He had 68 carries, 844 yards, 6 touchdowns. So he's a pretty impressive runner. He had a 2.6% big-time throw rate. Doesn't really wow you. Turnover-worthy play rate was 2.3%. That's pretty good. Average at a target was 8.6 yards. And his adjusted completion percentage was 75.6, which is good. I mean, that was good. His PFF grades offensively last year was 83.2. Passing was 70.7, which, again, that's pretty okay for a starting quarterback. It just brought him up a lot with his rushing grade, which was 86. Completion percentage by depth. Like I said, I tried to break down a lot on the quarterback. Completion percentage by depth, his short passes, which is 0 to 9 yards, he was 78.5% accuracy, which is great. His mid-range passing, 47.1%. Which is just not good. I mean, Jordan's, when you compare, was almost double that. His deep passing 20-plus yards was only 41.5%. So really he must do a lot of swing, screens, and slants, and because his mid, anything past 10 yards has just not been very accurate. So, you know, I'm not sold on Daniels as a passer. I think if you can contain him and make him beat you with his arm, Florida State has a really good chance despite them having a good receiver group. If it is Nussmeier, he only played in limited action last season. He has 57 career attempts, 50.9% completion rate, and he was sidelined in fall camp with an ankle injury. Of course, he's back at 100% now, but that slows your growth. That slows your progression in a new offense. And, you know, 57 attempts with a 50% completion rate doesn't scare you any more than the guy in front of him. So, to me, I give advantage Florida State quarterback. I know some people say it's a wash, and it probably is. And if he had a similar season to what he had in 2019, I'd say he was a better passer than Jordan. But, I mean, looking at 2021, to me, I'm going advantage Florida State here at the quarterback position. And I don't think Daniels is a guy who really, really scares your defense. As far as the tight end position, this is another one that's kind of unimpressive for LSU. They do return two guys from last year, but combined, they barely had over 100 yards of production. Both returning players graded out well below average on PFF, and their blocking grades weren't very good either. So, you know, FSU doesn't really have any impact tight ends either, but LSU, you know, they've had to face some in the past, like with Notre Dame and teams like that and Louisville, but this isn't going to be one of them times. So I think they can handle these the LSU tight ends. That's not really a concern. And so when you really stack it up, and just to do a quick review on the offense, so you got a quarterback who is middle of the road. He can run the ball. He can throw it okay, but he doesn't impress you. You have some good wide receivers, mostly two really good wide receivers and some unproven guys behind it. You have some questions at running back and some questions on offense. Tell me why Florida State defense can't have a big game against these guys. I just don't see a lot of that hype. Now, granted, a lot of LSU's hype for the season does come on the other side of the ball, but you got to score to win. And so this is something that I'm looking for Florida State to have the advantage in. I think Florida State's defense, especially with a game to kind of get in rhythm, is better than LSU's offense. And so that's, you know, I'm not, again, I do want to make a point to say I'm not trying to do this preview and sound like Florida State's about to go in there and kick LSU's teeth in, like 40-17 or something like that. By no means. They're probably going to get theirs. They're probably going to break, you know, a deep pass with Boutte or something like that. And there's nothing to say that Noah Cain can't be a talented running back. But I like to look at production. I like to look at experience. And right now, they just don't have it on that side of the ball. So to me, you go advantage FSU defense. And so we'll just kind of close the chapter on their offense there, and we'll move over to the other side of the ball, which is the one that you have to worry about the most, and that's the LSU defense. On defense, LSU's strength is their front seven, and these guys had the potential to be pretty good. The names you should know is Ollie Gay, Jacqueline Roy, and BJ, I don't know how to say it, Ojulari, I believe. They're pretty good, and they're going to be tough for FSU to block. Like I said, there was some concerns for me on the offensive line, even against Duquesne, and this is a different animal. This is a whole different animal. Those three that I mentioned, they were able to create 106 total pressures last year and 13 sacks. So it's going to be a test for this offensive line, which is why I think this is going to be mostly a defensive battle when you look at the matchup position group by position group. I mean, this group could be pretty stout. Now, granted, they're not like 2021 Georgia defense by any means, but their defensive line is going to be tough for FSU to block, and that's going to be, to me, where this game rides, is can they block them successfully enough to at least run the ball or, you know, give Jordan some time to get the ball out on some passes, but it's not going to be easy. So I'm glad to see that they got Darius Washington back. I'm glad to see that they got Maurice back, and I think that will help. But this is going to be a challenge. At linebacker, LSU has to replace their leading tackler from last year, Damone Clark. And he was a 100-plus tackler at linebacker. He was one of the leaders on their defense. So that's something that is hard to replace, and they're going to miss him, especially because some of the guys that they're bringing back aren't overly impressive. You have Micah Baskerville, who returns. I actually saw one outlet that said he was projected to be a backup player and not even a starter, but he's actually one of their better graded out linebackers who's returning. He had a little over 70 PFF grade, which is a pretty good season. They have Clemson transfer Mike Jones Jr. He had 33 tackles last year and a PFF grade of 60.1. So again, average to not really even slightly above average at 60.1, but just an average grade. And another player who's projected to contribute from the reports that I read was Greg Penn III. Last season, he played 92 snaps, but was the second worst graded defensive player on the team with a 36.3 PFF grade. That is just not good. That's not good at all. Again, not that PFF is the gospel, but the grades usually do correlate to who plays well and who doesn't. So I'm not really seeing a whole lot from the linebacker group here that blows me away. Of course, again, they have room to improve, and they could be, you know, better. It could be a lot of the schemes and stuff that they ran last year, but you just don't have anyone who strikes fear into the heart of your offense. The secondary is going to be rebuilt this year. They only returned two players with any kind of significant experience, but they were able to grab some pretty talented guys through the portal. which will help a lot. And they do have some depth at the position because of that. But again, they did lose some pretty talented pieces. And as far as the transfers they got Mekhi Garner from UL Lafayette. He has over 1,000 snaps of experience, and he graded out pretty well. So you can't really knock that too much, but some of his individual grades were pretty inconsistent. And again, you're talking about UL Lafayette as group of five. So how does he translate to the Power Five level? How does he translate against some of the better teams? Because UL Lafayette, when I was doing my preview, because of course, you know, we play them later in the season, they played one Power Five team against a 5-7 Texas. And he wasn't bad in that game either, but they played in a pretty, they played a pretty weak schedule as far as a lot of the other teams that they played from the group of five. So it's not like he's went against a lot of challenging guys to have those decent grades. So it is a potential. Some of the more pass heavy teams last year were some of his more poorly graded games. So his coverage game, his coverage grades were pretty good. So I'm not necessarily worried about like this guy being a liability for them at DB, someone that you can expose, but his grades were pretty terrible as far as run defense goes. Once again, that plays into the hands of Florida State, who's a run-heavy team. So, you know, he may be able to maybe lock some of your guys down as far as coverage-wise, but if he's not very good in the run defense, then that's something that Florida State could also look to run towards his side of the field. And so next on the transfer list, they got Jarek Bernard Converse. He's a corner from previously from Oklahoma State, and I really can't say too much about the guy. He graded out pretty well in a pass-heavy conference. Obviously, the Big 12 throws it a lot, so there's not really a whole lot you can say there. But he's in a new defense, so he's got to learn the system, and he's, you know, he's got some rust probably to shake off for the start of the season in the new defense and a new scheme. They added an Arkansas transfer. He struggled pretty early in his career, was graded out pretty badly, but then he had a solid but not stellar season last year. He graded out at 68.1. They do have some other transfers and some other returning players. I know they got like Seven Banks from Ohio State, but he doesn't have a whole lot of experience either. So to me, in my opinion, the potential to be good is there for their secondary. They have some depth at the position that has quality, but I mean, none of these guys, like, it's not the honey badger back there by any means. You have a couple guys who have some quality experience and some quality snaps, but they don't come off as necessarily game changers, and they're all going to have to put it together in a new defense. And when you look at the Tiger defense from last year, they were 71st in scoring defense, 65th in total defense, 71st in efficiency, and 98th in finishing drives, 46th in havoc rate, 87th in third down defense. So there's obviously a lot of room for them to improve. And they, like I said, they still do have some talented players on that side of the ball. And they did bring a new defensive coordinator, obviously, when Kelly came in, Matt House. He was the defensive coordinator at Kentucky in 2017 and 2018 before moving on to be the linebackers coach for the Kansas City Chiefs. He did turn the defense around at Kentucky, even though he had a pretty rough first year. And I know it's Kentucky, so I get that. I'm going to couch it with that. But they were 91st in total defense and 75th in scoring defense. But in 2018, he did turn them around, and they finished 23rd in total defense and 6th in scoring defense. So that just kind of leads you to believe that this is why I said it was so paramount to not only have that week zero game, but to get them so early, because you have some guys who have been able to turn around programs and been able to do some things, but it takes time to get that rolling. It takes recruiting. And so when you look at just getting them game one with still a lot of things to figure out, still a lot of new faces, and still a lot of unimpressive position groups, again, I'm not telling you Florida State's going to come out and punch them in the mouth, but I sure hope they do, and the possibility is definitely there. And when you look at, as well, one other factor to keep in mind, they also have a I put it down here. They also have a true freshman kicker, which could be a huge factor for an offense that may struggle or a game that may be tight. So when you look at that, that could also be advantage FSU. And that's just another, again, like we talked about, guys, it's the little things. When you look at these little things that keep adding up, it makes you feel a little better. And I understand the level and caliber of athletes that you're going to get at LSU and the team speed is going to be a lot different than Notre Dame. But Brian Kelly had over a decade to build that program. They were almost a perennial top 10 team. And Florida State almost knocked them off in overtime last year. So if they played Brian Kelly's team tight after 10 years of building a roster and developing and installing, I like their chances in game one. So they're familiar with what Kelly might run, which I think also is an advantage. Of course, he's familiar with what you're going to run too, but when I sit down and I look at it, there's a lot of people who think Florida State doesn't have a chance, and I know they're basing things off of what they saw in the past. A lot of people think LSU could surprise some people this year. They have a top 10 and a top 20 power ranking. But when I look at it and I just weigh position group, and how everything matches up, tell me why Florida State can't go in there and win. I wish it was maybe not in New Orleans. That doesn't quite seem like a truly neutral game. But Florida State's already sold out 30,000 tickets, and that's not including what they could get on the secondary market. And so you have to think that it's, I would say, maybe 60-40 crowd-wise. It's definitely not going to be full-on advantage LSU. So I think that kind of neutralizes the crowd aspect of it a little bit as well. But like I said, guys, when you go through and you look at the offense, they have questions on offensive line. They have a quarterback who's not that impressive other than with his legs. You have a receiver group who's got one to two really good guys, and the rest are, they're average college receivers. You have a defensive line who's good. You have linebackers who are questionable. And you have a secondary with potential that's never put it together on the field at the same time. You have a true freshman kicker and a whole new set of offense, defense, coaches, coordinators. All that stuff is brand new. And so to me, I gotta lean towards Florida State in this game. I'm to be honest with you, I'm probably not gonna put any money on it because I still don't trust Florida State on the big stage until I see it. Now, that's not saying I think they're going to lose because it's a big game. I'm just saying I need to see them win this type of game for me to believe that they're not back, because I don't want to say they're back, but you know what I mean, like back on the level of winning big games. But I just look across the board, and Florida State has questions on their offensive line, and that's really the only concern I have going into this game, unless they have to get into the depth chart. And if they don't, then to me, like I said, I like advantage FSU. And so I'll take Florida State in a close one. I think it might be a little low scoring, but you might see some broken plays. Being so new in the season turned into some scores. I think the energy level will be there. Like Mike Norvell said, this team doesn't need a speech to get up for that game. I'm also sure there was some, to a degree, some look ahead to LSU for last week. I'm sure the install for Duquesne was not a whole lot compared to what you're going to get for LSU. You're going to have the playbook wide open in this game. Again, they didn't show anything to LSU. They ran such a vanilla game plan last week. So I'm ready and excited to see things open up as far as play calling goes, blitz packages and everything like that. So I think you're going to see a more aggressive and just kind of more flying around Florida State team than you did last week against Duquesne. But I do have to say that the level of competition, regardless of whether I think they have question marks or not, it's going to be absolutely night and day between this team and Duquesne. So Florida State's going to have to bring their A game. They're going to have to strap it up. It's going to be a wild environment. They're going to have to control their emotions. Norvell, I think, called a good game, even if it was very vanilla. I think he didn't try to get cute sometimes like they did in the past. They just stuck to what was working for them, which is what I think they should do this time. If you can establish a run game, run it down their throat until they can stop it. Let the pass open up. Maybe you catch a broken play or a missed assignment being in a new defense, and you can pop them for one over the top. I like these receivers. They can just make some plays. I mean, maybe you get it to Michael Pittman over the middle, and he can make something happen. But overall, like I said, I'm high on this team after rewatching the film. Not high on them, but I feel good about this game after watching the rewatch from Duquesne. So I look forward to it. It's going to be an insane environment. I'm already looking forward to it, heading down to New Orleans myself. And this is Florida State's chance. This is their chance to announce to the world that they're back to respectability, because regardless of whether what stage the programs are in, rebuilds or not, to beat an SEC West team with a brand name like LSU that's only a few years removed from a national championship with a big branded type head coach and Brian Kelly, that's a good win all the way around. Of course, I think if Florida State goes in there and wins, you'll probably hear a lot of people come out and say, well, it's LSU and they're new and they're not as good as we thought and all that. There'll be excuses, I'm sure. If they lose, then it'll be like, well, Florida State's not that good, and or what, you know, there's always an excuse. Always an excuse why whatever, you know. So I think LSU's still a solid opponent. Obviously somebody thinks they're good. They're, you know, with their win projection this year and with their top 10 and top 20 power rankings. So I'm excited for this one, guys. This is a big one. This is Florida State's first measuring stick game to see where they're at. You got a bye week next week, so you got no one else to look, you know, you got nothing else to plan on, no one to look forward to. You can put all your marbles into this one game. And yeah, I mean, that's pretty much all there is to it. So come out with energy, come out controlled, come out and punch them in the mouth and let them know that this isn't the Florida State of the last 2 years. I don't know that they're, I'm not going to say this is a guaranteed win. I'm not going to say it's going to be an easy win. And Florida State could definitely lose this game if they don't bring it. But Florida State could also win this game and I'm not going to say comfortably as in like two or three scores, but I mean, Florida State could win by 10 points, maybe even a little bit more if they really put it all together, because there's so many question marks on the other side or on the other sidelines. So we'll wait and see how it plays out. Hopefully this preview gave you guys a little better insight into the LSU game coming up. And hopefully you guys are excited as I am. I'll try and put out some more stuff later on in the week, although, like I said, I will be traveling. I don't know that I'll be able to do an instant reaction because obviously I'll be at the game. And then if we win, you might see me climbing a light post in Bourbon Street on the news somewhere, because it's going to be huge and I'm going to be excited. It might look like one of those World Series celebrations where, you know, I'm halfway up a light pole swinging my shirt or something like that. So I'm just excited to see how it all plays out. I'm excited for the environment. This is what college football is about. Two marquee brands, New Orleans, Superdome. This is what we've waited for all fall. I know the season started last week. It was fun to get a 40-point win, but this is why you look forward to the fall, games like this. And so I'm really excited about it, and hope you guys, if you're traveling to the game, be safe, have fun. If you see me, give me a shout. And if you're watching at home, I hope you guys are in for a good show, and because I know it's going to be, I just got a feeling it's going to be a great game, and I hope Florida State brings their A game and can pull off this win. And with that being said, I'll see you guys on the other side of the LSU game, and we'll dig into things a little more next week. Thank you for listening, and go Noles.